Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, Chapter 12, When He Murti Bewilders Lord Shiva, text number 39. Konume Titaren Mayam Visaktas Twadrite Puman Twamstan Visrijitim Bhavan Dusram Akritatmabi. Ka, what? Nu, indeed. May, my. Atitaret, can surpass. Mayam, illusory energy. Vishakta, attached to material sense enjoyment. Tvatrite, except for you. Puman, person. Tan, such conditions. Tan, unto the materially attached persons. Visrijatayim, in surpassing. Bhavan, reactions and material activities. Dustaram, very difficult to surmount. Akrita Atmabhi, by persons unable to control their senses. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. My dear Lord Shambhu, who are within this material world, but you can surpass my illusory energy. This is a question mark. Okay. My dear Lord Shambhu, who within this material world but you can surpass my illusory energy? People who are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Oh, people are generally attached to sense enjoyment and conquered by its influence. Indeed, the influence of material nature is very difficult for them to surmount. Purport. Of the three chief demigods, Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, all but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they are described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he is not influenced. The living entities are affected by Maya, but although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he is not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world, except for Lord Shiva, are swayed by Maya. Lord Shiva is therefore neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He is between the two. So I'll read some more, but I'll comment a little bit on this verse. If one just reads this purport, one would certainly get bewildered. In other words, Prabhupada first of all says that in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're all described as Mayi, that is Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, all described as Maya, which means under Maya's influence. So that means, according to that, if that was the end of the purport, then Brahma, Vishnu, and Maheshwara, Lord Shiva, were all under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he's not influenced. So now we've just been told that although in the Chaitanya Charitamrita it says he's influenced, but now we find out he's not influenced. Living entities are affected by Maya, but although Lord Shiva apparently associates with Maya, he's not affected. In other words, all living entities within this material world except for Lord Shiva are swayed by Maya. So he's taken out of the being influenced by Maya. Lord Shiva is therefore neither Vishnu Tattva nor Jiva Tattva. He's in between the two. All but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. They are described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. So the three of them, it says, first of all, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, all three of them are described as under Maya's influence. But the first statement is that of the three demigods, Vishnu, Brahma, Vishnu, Shiva, all but Vishnu are under the influence of Maya. So first it eliminates Vishnu as being under the influence of Maya. Then it says they're all under Maya. Then it says that although Lord Shiva is under Maya, he associates with Maya, he's not under Maya. So try to figure that out in case you missed it. First it says that there are three of them, Brahma, Vishnu, and Shiva, who are the predominant demigods. Both of them, that is Brahma and Shiva, are under Maya, but Vishnu isn't. That's in the first part of the purport. And then the second statement is in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, it says they're all in Maya. And then the third statement is Lord Shiva is not, at least, is not in Maya. So we can conclude either Brahma is the only one in Maya, or Brahma and Vishnu is in Maya, or all three of them are in Maya. Yes. Yeah. Right. He's not. But then it says, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, they're described as Mayi, which means under Maya's influence. That means all three of them are under Maya's influence. But even though Lord Shiva associates with Maya, he's not influenced. But now Lord Shiva is eliminated from being influenced. So what is it? I mean, ultimately we know Lord Vishnu is not influenced. And we know Brahma is influenced. Whatever the Chaitanya Charitamrita may say. The question is whether Lord Shiva is influenced. And there's evidence that he is influenced. Because we find in the story of Bhrigu Muni, when Bhrigu Muni went to test Lord Vishnu, Lord Brahma, and Lord Shiva, then Bhrigu Muni first went to Brahma, his father, and didn't offer any obeisances. He went to Brahma Loka. Well, back up a little bit. There were sages at one place, and they were all trying to figure out who's the supreme. They didn't know. Of course, we know, because we're better than the sages. We should have gone there and give a Srimad Bhagavatam class to the sages. And they could have saved so much trouble trying to find out. Because we probably have to have some mystic powers to get to where the sages were. In any case, they deputed Bhrigu Muni to find out, to do an investigation. Now, their criteria wasn't who could lift the largest mountain or what kind of mystic powers. Their criteria was who's the most tolerant. In other words, they wanted to find out who's not under the influence of Maya. Because although you can lift a mountain, because in the story of Dhenukasura, when the coward boys and Krishna went to the forest of Talavan in order to get the kapita fruits that were in the trees, that first thing was that Lord Balaram went there and he started to shake the trees, which created a disturbance, and Dhenukasura came and kicked Balaram with his hind legs. And the Lord Balaram grabbed his hind legs and threw him so many yojanas against Govardhan Hill. And for 1 hour, Dhenukasura became unconscious. When he woke up, he picked up Govardhan Hill and threw it at Lord Balaram. What's that?
He picked up Govardhan Hill and threw it at Balaram?
Yeah.
No.
How do you know it's no?
Irrepressible, I can't do that.
You were there? This is coming from the Acharyas. Yeah, well, we found out. No, he was so powerful that you could pick up Govardhan Hill and throw it.
Really? I didn't know that. I'm sorry.
Why are you sorry? You just found out something new. And Lord Balaram caught it. Caught Govardhan, of course. And then threw it back at Dhenukasura and knocked him out again. So there are many powerful demons also. And after all, Hiranyaksha was considered to be practically half the size of the universe. And he fought against Raha, who had picked up Bhumandala, not a small little piece of earth, much bigger than Govardhan Hill. But the sages determine that who's ever the most tolerant, they have surpassed the influence of Maya. Because Maya agitates one, either for lamentation or for hankering. So only a liberated soul who's surpassed Maya can be eligible to be considered to be superior. And since there's three predominant personalities within this universe, Vishnu, Shiva, and Brahma, they want to find out of the three, who's the most tolerant. Now, how many of us really judge a person by how tolerant they are? Tolerant doesn't mean that they stick their hand into a, you know, into a nail and they don't say anything. No, tolerant means that because they're in Krishna consciousness, therefore they see everything equally. They're not disturbed. Just like one time, Prabhupada came to Vrindavan. And in Vrindavan, at this time, this is around 1972, maybe a little later, 1973, they were building the Krishna Balaram temple. And the devotees there in charge, Sarabi and Gunarnava, were sending Prabhupada very encouraging letters that the temple is almost complete, it's ready to be opened by Gaur Purnim of 73. So Prabhupada, taking this information, he invited, I believe, the prime minister, he invited the chief minister of Uttar Pradesh, he invited so many MPs from the parliament to come for the opening. But Prabhupada came a couple of weeks before the opening. He also invited all the temple presidents from all over the world to come for the opening of the Krishna Balaram temple. So this must have been 74. I had just come back from India, actually. At that time, we got an invitation to go back. And Prabhupada came there and found out, because when I was there in 74, they had the first temple presidents meeting there. And we were saying it was known as Fogel Ashram. Has anyone ever been to Fogel Ashram? What's that? Yeah, the Fogel Ashram. It's still old. Did they fix it up? They must have, you know. Otherwise it would have fallen down by now. It was infested with monkeys. It was like, we found out what monkeys were when we came to Vrindavan. Because we'd wash our clothes, we put it on the line, and the monkeys didn't pull them off the line, they just ripped them up. And at that time, having a dhoti was considered to be quite opulent. We were a little less opulent after hanging our clothes up on the line. In any case, we had a walk. Fogel Ashram is towards downtown, going. It's halfway to Loy Bazaar. So it's like a 20-minute walk. We have to walk 20 minutes every day to go to the Vrindavan, the construction site. There was no temple. It was only a construction site. And the only thing that was standing was Prabhupada, something about Prabhupada's rooms. It was some part of Prabhupada's rooms completed. And then later on, not so long after that, Saravi was telling Prabhupada that the temple's almost ready. So Prabhupada invited all the temple presidents to come back from around the world, all these dignitaries from India to come. And Prabhupada arrived a few weeks before the Gaur Purnim to find out how things were going. And he discovered that actually, I guess this was in 75, actually it was just a construction site. Nothing was there except some cement bags, and Prabhupada's rooms were still unfinished, and a lot of dust. And even the monkeys didn't come there. They didn't want to. There's nothing there for even the monkeys. So Prabhupada was furious. And everywhere he looked, flames were coming out of his eyes, and he was burning the devotees to ashes, practically speaking. So the devotees were hiding behind the sandbags, and they didn't want to. Prabhupada said, who did this? You know, because Prabhupada obviously, if he said, oh, no problem, you know, so what, the prime minister, he's just a mundane figure anyhow, he's just a politician. Who cares if he gets upset that we invited him and then we tell him he shouldn't come? Imagine if Prabhupada came there for the opening, and the prime minister would have greeted him when he came for the opening of the sandbags. That would have been even more of an embarrassment. In any case, Prabhupada was furious, and he was chastising the devotees for some time, and then he went into his rooms, and the devotees were afraid to approach him, like the demigods were afraid to approach Lord Narsingadev after Lord Narsingadev had killed Hiranyakashipu. But one devotee had to go in and tell Prabhupada something. And when he came in, he found Prabhupada completely peaceful and calm. And so he's quite surprised, and he asked Prabhupada, you know, just a few minutes later, before you were full of fury, and people, devotees were afraid of even approaching you, now you seem completely calm and peaceful. He said, like a pure devotee, and Prabhupada explained, a pure devotee is just like the ocean, that on the surface of the ocean, there may be so many waves, there may be a hurricane, there is so much disturbance. But deep inside the ocean, then everything is very calm. There's no disturbance whatsoever. So one who's actually absorbed in Krishna consciousness, who's living in the spiritual world, he's not affected by whatever is going on externally in the material world. He remains calm and peaceful because his actual existence is in the spiritual world. He's just manifesting some activities here by Krishna's arrangement for the benefit of the conditioned souls. So one who's actually deeply absorbed in Krishna consciousness, and the most Krishna conscious person is who? Does anyone know who the most Krishna conscious person is? No? No. No. His name begins with a K.
Krishna.
You're surprised.
I didn't expect that.
You're surprised that Krishna is the most Krishna conscious person. Yes, he's the most Krishna conscious. No one can compete with Krishna in terms of being Krishna conscious.
But sometimes he's bewildered by himself too.
What's that?
But sometimes he's bewildered by himself too.
That's also part of his consciousness.
Right.
So, one who's Krishna conscious, then he's not disturbed by anything. Like Krishna is never disturbed. And therefore, when Bhriga Muni, he came to test Lord Brahma, he went to Brahmaloka. And there, Lord Brahma was very happy to see his son, Bhriga Muni, and came to greet him. But Bhriga Muni completely ignored him, didn't pay any respects. And therefore, Brahma became angry that my son doesn't know any etiquette. I'm his father. He's supposed to come and reciprocate my greeting. So Lord Brahma was very angry, but his great intelligence checked his anger. But his anger was shown. Then Bhriga Muni he realized Brahma had his limits of tolerance, because just by mentally not showing respect, Brahma became disturbed. Then he went to Kailas, where his brother Lord Shiva resides. And Lord Shiva was very happy to see his brother and came out and said, "Oh, Bhriga Muni, my dear brother." You know. So Lord Brahma said, Lord Bhriga Muni said, "Hey, stop." He said, "Don't touch me, you filthy so-and-so. You know, you're covered with ashes and you visit crematoriums and your friends are ghosts. You know, don't touch me. I'm a Brahmin. I'll get contaminated." So Lord Shiva, hearing this insult, became very angry. And he picked up his trident and said, "All right, you don't want me to touch you? What about my trident? Here goes. Catch this one, boy." So he was about to kill Bhriga Muni with his trident. And Parvati fell at his feet and said, "Stop, you know, he's your brother, you know. Don't kill your brother, it's give you a bad reputation." So Parvati invoked Bhriga Muni's, Lord Shiva's compassion, and he didn't kill his brother, but Bhriga Muni didn't wait around to see what's going to happen. Instead, he went to Swetadweep, to the milk ocean, and there he broke into the palace of Lord Vishnu, ran up to Lord Vishnu while he was on the Lakshmi Devi was massaging his feet, and kicked him hard in the chest. So Lord Vishnu, he got down from his bed and he paid obeisances to Bhriga Muni and then put Bhriga Muni on the bed and started to massage his feet and said, "My dear Bhriga Muni, please forgive me my offense. I didn't know you arrived. You know, I should have come and greeted you first. But now I see that your soft lotus foot has hit my hard chest, and I hope I haven't harmed you. So let me massage your lotus foot. You're so kind to visit my Vaikuntha planet. So please stay here and purify it. And I know because your foot, your lotus-like foot, has touched my chest, now it's become purified, and I'm sure the goddess of fortune will agree to stay there forever." So Bhriga Muni was completely struck with wonder how tolerant Lord Vishnu was. Not only didn't he take offense, but he also thought that he had committed some offense against the Brahmin. Because Lakshmi Devi, who was a devotee, didn't take it that way. Because of the offense of Bhriga Muni, it said that now the Brahmins in general, the real Brahmins, are poor. The goddess of fortune has withdrawn her benedictions from the Brahmins. So be careful before you take second initiation. You may lose the favor of the goddess of fortune. Those who aren't second initiated, you're protected, don't worry. So Bhriga Muni went back to the sages and told them that actually the most tolerant is Lord Vishnu. And they all accepted him as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Therefore, in general, you can find that there are many stories where Lord Shiva is quite tolerant. But there are other stories, such as this one, that illustrate that Lord Vishnu is the only one who's supremely tolerant. Now, these stories are given to us to illustrate something. They're not just, you know, it's not a competition whether Lord Shiva is actually the topmost Vaishnava. It's not meant to fill our minds with all kinds of contradictions. So we're bewildered. Is he tolerant? Is he not tolerant? Is he under the influence of Maya? Is he not? No, but some stories are there in the Vedas, going to different millenniums, different lifetimes of Brahma to illustrate points that are not meant to be, in our minds, consistent. As a matter of fact, the Bhagavatam, unlike our linear time system, the materialistic time system, especially in Kali Yuga, is all meant to just show how everything is progressing. That in the beginning there was nothing, and then of course there was the one-celled living entities, and they evolved, and they became invertebrates and fish, and then birds, and then mammals, and human beings, and we're progressing. It's all like history, the history of Europe. And now we're in the topmost age. We're in the most scientific age. We've discovered so many things. We're the most advanced, and time is progressing, and things will even get better and better and better because it's all linear. But actually, the Vedic culture, the Vedic literature, the histories are not linear. They're meant to show the essence of the philosophy, the essence of the teachings. They're meant to show us the examples so that we can learn some lessons. Because the ultimate lesson is that time is eternal, and what's going on in the spiritual world, the essence of it is eternal. Krishna is God eternally. We're eternally servants of God. And we're here in the material nature trying to imitate him eternally. There's nothing new. Therefore, when we find contradictory examples, we should understand that these examples are just given to us to illustrate points, like Lord Shiva apparently getting angry at his brother and threatening to kill him. And yet, there are other stories of Lord Shiva being tolerant and giving Vrikasura a benediction and then running away from him. Or Lord Shiva, in his relation with Parvati, there's some story is given by Kalidas, where Lord Shiva showed his tolerance. But these are all meant to show us examples. But ultimately you can conclude, as it, more or less, that Lord Vishnu, obviously, he's never under Maya, under the influence of Maya. Lord Shiva associates with Maya, but his apparent bewilderment by Maya is just apparent. But Lord Brahma, he could be subjected to Maya unless he becomes a pure devotee like our Brahma, who's Haridas Thakur, who was subjected to some influence of Maya, but then got the benediction by Lord Chaitanya when he became Haridas Thakur to become eternally liberated, to become a pure devotee. So Brahma can be a pure devotee. He could be a mixed devotee. He could even be a non-devotee. But Lord Shiva, Lord Vishnu, because they have such responsible positions in the material world, they're always beyond the influence of Maya. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions, comments?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, question. The Pandavas seemed very tolerant for many years undergoing the directions of the Kauravas, but then at a certain point they engaged in war with the Kauravas. So how would you say their tolerance developed through all this?
Well, Krishna wanted them to fight, so they fought. So Arjuna's mind was telling him not to fight in the beginning because he was put under Yogamaya, to give us an example. But he tolerated his mind and he followed Krishna's orders and he fought and killed the people Krishna wanted him to kill. So the real tolerance is tolerate anything that tells us not to serve Krishna. That's real tolerance. To simply engage in Krishna's service and to tolerate any idea except for Krishna's servant and become detached from it. Anything else? Kala Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Kidaj.